I'm Julie Rawls, and I'm with Peg Michaels, and we're talking about civic organizing. Peg, I'd like to start with why you felt that there was a need for this new approach, and what is civic organizing?
The civic organizing framework is, in my way of thinking, it's a series of theories that Tony and I had that captured a theoretical or an idea about a new approach to organizing. So then we had to make the theory come alive, and it only could come alive, and this is not an innovation that could take place in a research lab. So it only could come alive in the environments and in the systems where we said it needed, that it had a potential value. So that took a very long time to test out the theory, and then to test out not only how did it work in one place, but could the particular practice, particular disciplines as they became practices, could that same practice work in another setting, in another sector? So that and so then by the time it was really interesting to me. Just the other day, I was thinking about this as I was talking to somebody, because I asked him, do you think, is it okay if we can say that you have produced a faith-based model for civic organizing, for governance? And they said, yeah. And so I was struck by, okay, so why did they allow me to use that word? Why are they comfortable with that word? And it was because they know why they want to do something different. They know what to do, and they know how to do it. So it's really three things. Now, the interesting thing is that each of those three things took a very long time to answer. We only worked with people that had already come to the point of knowing that they wanted change, that there was a change that was needed. Coming to a place where they could explain that through the lens of a civic organizing approach, that was a strong developmental problem. We had to spend a lot of time on that.
When you say they knew what it was or why it was, what is that?
Well, civic organizing is based upon the notion that current systems are not producing justice. And they knew that because they were in those systems. They knew that, and so then you can say, okay, what's justice? And that can take you off on a lot more words. But they knew that their systems were not producing the thing that drew them to those systems in the first place. And they then had to suspend judgment and open themselves up to the notion that an organizing approach brought inside the system, grounded in democratic and principles and civic principles, civic ways of functioning, that could be a solution strategy.
Mm-hmm. And you use a tagline, building democracy for the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Make that connection between why you started working in systems and when your interest is around democracy.
Do you know, when I started doing this work, my interest wasn't in democracy. That's not the word that grabbed me. The thing that grabbed me was my experience of being in dysfunctional systems. And not only the laziness, you know, of dysfunctional systems, you know, the way that you could see a mind become lazy, you know, and accommodating to things around them that they would not think were right, you know. That part of it, I suppose, is the thing that really was embedded in me, and it was a real driver. But I associated that dysfunction and really cruel things happening to people, and cruel things being done to people, and really the helplessness and the lack of accountability. I associated that level of meanness to the word justice. That was that these systems were unjust.
Mm-hmm. And where did that come from?
The real story about coming to this place of civic organizing is being arrested when I was in a system for attempting to do what I thought was good. How easily I could be targeted, what it meant to be in jail, see who was in jail, see what the so-called justice system was, and after that, and then to see that it didn't, that everybody played a role in that. That was not a, there was no simple scapegoating mechanism in that experience. That I could no longer attempt to do good, make the world a better place, from some position that didn't get at the fact that human beings spend all of their lives in systems. They don't, you can't escape social systems. You spend all your life in them. The experience that you have in them will formulate your understanding of the way the world ought to be. So attempting to try to fix the world by going out there was like trying to put your finger in a dam, that metaphor, that story. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, so you knew you had to deal with the internal systems.
Right. You had to go inside. Mm-hmm. Yeah, inside. And see if you can call people to their fundamental sense of ethics in terms of how things should work and their role in that. It was in the process of saying, but for what? What's the ultimate reason? What's the transcendent purpose? Justice was what was the ultimate purpose, but how is that produced? What's the filter that justice has to go through? And I was raised a religious person, but this work was a secular work, and so the transcendent call for justice became steeped in the notion that, well, democracy is what contains that. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. call, for all of us.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But you had been at the Center for Democracy at the University of Minnesota. Was that after your experience in state government?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had left state government before I went through the experience of that what I would call a transformative experience of seeing how fragile you were and what a target you were. I had left and I had made a connection to Harry Boyd, who was at the Humphrey Institute, and that's when I also began to really be able to work with somebody that was looking at the notion of democracy and how it related to organizing and democratic formation through many, many different experiences and so.
It's almost like you asked me, do you care about that? Or whatever, if you didn't ask me, it gave me an opening to say, I don't care about democracy.
Yeah.
Why? I don't care about democracy.
Yeah.
And I mean, the reason
we thought that was sacrilegious.
Yeah.
By the way.
I had been really emotionally involved in the 1968 election, and then had been had worked for this legislator in St. Cloud, and had worked at the legislature. And I am a learner. I like to learn, and I absorb information pretty easily. And I was so struck that I did not know what to do as a citizen. I didn't know that when I was
when I first learned about this person running for the legislature, it was like, oh, well, this is how it actually works. And I think I'm making a case around our education civic. Yeah. You know, and then when we had been, I had that experience, I mean, a number of experiences that have to do with democracy, and I had been working with you on this project, and I think we had done the Lazarus Project already by then. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I certainly got the concepts, but I wasn't really connecting it to democracy. I was not making that connection. And so I guess I think part of the reason why I think this story is important is that if it's that hard for me to make this connection, I mean, not that I'm exceptional in any way, but I care about these things. You know, imagine how hard it is for everybody else.
And I think your story illustrates exactly what. And I think these are not easy things to be able to articulate, but I think they're worth trying to articulate. The people's experience around public endeavor has to do with instrumentals, engineering, you know, the mechanics of how do you run a campaign, how do you get somebody elected, how do you vote. Very narrow instrumental ways of imagining public life. Yeah. So where's the spirit in that? Where is the sense of what larger imperative that would make something that would give purpose to those things.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
So but that was how democracy was taught. It was taught the notion of separation of church and state. It was taught separation of branches, constitution. Yeah. But the passionate ownership and need for the philosophical transcendent meaning of democracy was disassociated with all those things.
Absolutely. And in this time, and we've talked about this, but in this time when we are all dealing with very troubling kind of political things, I think this is just such an important concept. And how do we help people to get to that more transcendent
concept? Right. And that's one of the things I referenced earlier, the Renewing the Public Congregation case study. That's the argument for that if you, we know, science knows, the arts know that human beings can be inspired. We know the source in the brain for that being able to be, to take place. And to not tend to that part of ourselves that can be inspired by the human endeavor to produce democracy leaves that function, that enlightening function, open to be inspired by things that may or may not support democracy. Mm-hmm. And so we, with Renewing the Public Congregation, we came to know that if you do not tend to the ability for human beings to make meaning out of things and to be inspired by something transcendent, to not do that, it's not just neglect, it is to run the risk of having that function, that necessary human function, be taken over by something else, which is not necessarily democratic in nature, you know. So it's like you and I think we're living in a time period where we're seeing what's happened. So that language, democratic language, can get hijacked and used outside of its authentic meaning, you know. And that's when we started working with Michael Hartounian, that became a very, very important piece
of my own developmental process when I was taught that democracy is a set of ideals mm-hmm. that are in tension with each other. Mm-hmm. It is not voting. That's not. It's a set of tension that cannot exist in isolation. They are common goods, and they only can be defined in tension. And you cannot have freedom if you don't think about questions of unity. Of what's good for the whole versus what's good for me, or those tensions that you have to live in. If you don't teach that, and if you don't teach that democracy is not a given, that it has to be found in those tensions, well, then you can hijack that language, and your freedom can be done at the cost of somebody of other groups and other people, and you can justify that by some other transcendent principles that you have that we say only can be thought of as your private life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you don't maintain the tension, you go far off on one end and not
right.
attentive and to the equally important.
You can't have democracy if you can't put yourself in the tension between the philosophical meanings or the precepts of what democracy stands for. So you can't say that you're for freedom if you're not for equality, you know, because your freedom will be done at the expense of another democratic principle that we have died for, and that is equality, you know. So, you know, the principles that matter are those principles that you would die for, and so they're important, you know.
How do we get to this place of people understanding the value of democracy and the transcendent values that go with that?
Sometimes I think that the only way that people, that we can as a people, take a look at bigger priorities is when we see them eroded. You know, when you have to actually go through an experience where something that you've taken for granted gets taken away. And so I think for many people right now, whatever perspective they're on, whatever they think about politics, they feel that there's a loss of something that they thought was necessary in their lives. So I think we're in that time period now where we're going to have to define again what does democracy really mean? So maybe that's always the way it is, that you have to come to a place. I know for a fact that if you can't reimagine principles, if you can't redefine core ideas, they're gonna get old, outmoded, and dangerous when people who feel lost hang on to those old, outmoded notions of what it is that those principles mean and close down. So maybe by nature we just simply have to go through these times in history where you know, like what we're experiencing now. But I also believe that no matter what, there just should be an automatic commitment to civic development in a democracy. Yeah. It just should be. Yeah. I don't, you know, that it shouldn't be so hard to say that should be invested in, yeah. You know. But in fact, it is hard to make that case. It has been hard to make that case.
Right.
So the whole conception of who is responsible for governance has to be reimagined.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I have gotten to be a lot more aware of what it really means to reconceptualize something, you know, that it isn't a matter of just talking at people.
Yeah.
That conceptions about the way the world works are not only wired within our very being, they're wired within the structures and the infrastructure that's out there. To bring about a reconception is a restructuring process, a very, very complex one, and probably can't work very well without some big threats that we're having to face that will set priorities. You know?
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the current environment will help us put a greater value on our civic knowledge, civic education?
What I know is that if this inability for us to govern does not create a climate for that, I don't know what will. That's what I know. The other thing that I know and that I've always known is that in the long run, whether other people respond to this argument, it is my duty to make it, you know, no matter what. It is just simply you are given life, you are given consciousness, you are given duty, and we have been blessed to live in one of the more free examples of democracy, one of the more privileged places on the planet, and so it doesn't cost anything to aspire to the high obligation of citizenship. It doesn't cost much. It doesn't cost anything. It costs a little knowledge, and again, that's why you really have to know that citizenship is the voting is the least dutiful part of it. The most difficult part is putting yourself in those tensions between what you want and what somebody else might want, between you having to be in an uncomfortable place with people that are that you are unfamiliar with, and you struggling with the fear that you may not get what it is that you desperately feel you need. And that human struggle is something that's the cost of citizenship. But if you really are going to take on this, what I think is the real challenge for citizenship in such a changing time, I believe you have to have deep faith in process. You have to believe that somehow in the process of being with people who may not share exactly your point of view, that somehow a process that is reasonable and has justice in it, we might call it fairness, but I would say just practices within it, and you think that people are going to play by the same rules as you're going to have to play by, no matter who they are, and there is a sense of structure and power around that you have some faith in, that will be carried out, some accountability will happen within that, then you can begin to imagine that by entering into the process, you may not get exactly what it is that you want, but you will get something that will ultimately be as good or better. That by entering into a political process in which you may not get the immediate thing that you feel that you might need, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big step for human beings to have to take.
These are the kinds of environments that civic organizing is creating.
Right. Right, and the 22-year model, now we call a model, created a structure and a practice that does not deny people's self-interest, but creates an opportunity for people to find where they may have greater interest than what they had imagined. And in a way to do that, the way to enter into that space, the way to experience accountability, and the ability to replicate it.